13-25-00-99-CV Medicare EMS. And Carolina Flores.
May it please the court. My name is Robert Bell, and I represent Appellant Medicare EMS in this appeal. The singular issue presented in this interlocutory appeal is whether the trial court abused its discretion in denying Medicare's motion to dismiss when the only timely served report was from a non-physician who is statutorily disqualified and prohibited from providing an opinion on the mandatory required element of medical causation. That is the singular issue before this court. In my time before the court, in addition to addressing any questions the court would like to ask, I would like to hit on two primary points that flow from that issue. The first point I would like to hit on is to briefly and efficiently, because I know the court has dealt with Chapter 74 and case law quite a bit, is to briefly not just talk about what is Chapter 74 and the requirements of an expert report, but to lay out three fundamental rules that have existed in Texas jurisprudence dating back at least 25 years to the Palacios case in 2001 that go forward until today that are extremely important to this appeal. So that's the first issue. The second one, I will then turn to why is the Everlove report, a report from a paramedic, non-physician, why does it amount to no report at all? Turning to the first point, Your Honor, the three rules that we will go through, they have a logical flow to them. So rule number one is, it deals with what is an expert report. To qualify or be considered an expert report, it must be timely served, and two primary things we see coming from the case law dating back to Palacios. It must be from a qualified expert, number one, and the case law continually says that it must meet the definition, the statutory definition of an expert report. What does that mean? It has to address standard of care, breach, and medical causation. And
well, again, counsel, didn't you acknowledge that you received the expert report in September? Because your client filed a motion to dismiss in August, and then in September, shortly thereafter, acknowledged that you received an expert report.
Your Honor, there was an acknowledgement. There was a pre-suit report by the paramedic, Mr. Everlove's report, that was provided before suit was even filed. That was not provided to counsel. A motion to dismiss was filed. The Everlove report came through, and the motion to dismiss at that time properly was pulled down in an evaluation of the Everlove report. It does not change the issue here today before the court, which is, does the Everlove report qualify as an expert report, or does it amount to no report at all? And that takes us from rule number one to rule number two. And rule number two is that if an expert report omits any one of the three mandatory elements, then it cannot be considered a good faith report as a matter of law. Where does that come from? Let me read from the Palacios opinion in 2001, the seminal case when Chapter 74 first really came into effect after 4590I. And here's what the Texas Supreme Court said in 2001, and I quote, "Nor can a report meet the purpose and thus constitute a good faith effort if it omits any, not all, any one of the statutory requirements." That was established in Palacios in 2001. And the litany of cases I could cite would be way too long, but I'll just go with a few Supreme Court cases. It's been carried forward to today. The Jernigan case in 2006, Supreme Court carried it forward. The Jelinek case in 2010, Supreme Court carried it forward. And then we get to the Scoresby case, which I'm sure we'll talk about some today, from 2011, the Supreme Court reaffirmed that proposition. But importantly, this court, not surprisingly, has followed that precedent and followed that case law. And specifically, just 4 months ago, Justices Pena and Justices Silva, in the Bagley case in May of 2025, you reaffirmed those propositions. And that being, in order to even have an expert report, it must address all three elements. And I'll read directly from the Bagley opinion, authored by you, Justice Pena, Justice Silver. You were one of the justices on the panel as well. And that one dealt with a situation where we had two reports from non-physicians, One was an OIG investigator, and the other was a, hold on just one second, a behavioral analysis. But there was also a timely served physician report from an MD. In laying out the black letter law in May of 2025, Justice Pena, you noted that in the TMLA, so this statute, it provides that no medical negligence cause of action may proceed forward. Not it can maybe, it cannot proceed forward until the plaintiff has made a good faith effort to demonstrate that a qualified expert, and that's really what we're talking about here, believes that a defendant breached the standard of care and proximately caused damages. You were identifying the elements. And then the case goes on to say, first, there is no dispute that Baird, that's the OIG person, and Nieto, the analyst, are not physicians. Therefore, they are not qualified to render an opinion. You cite to a prior case from this court, the Elijah case, and the parenthetical for that case is concluding that a report could not, not may not, a report cannot satisfy the TMLA's expert report requirement as to causation because the author was not a physician. So that rule number two, that if you omit an element, if you don't have an element within 120 days, as a matter of law, it cannot represent a good faith effort, which takes us then to the third rule.
Wait, what was the case you were citing?
The case is Rogers versus Bagley, 2025, Westlaw 1338096. That's from May 8th of 2025, which was after we had submitted our brief to this court.
So, counsel, why did your client file the dismissal in December of 2024, almost 16 months after acknowledging you received an expert report?
Your Honor, good question. And I think probably the question that Justice Silver, you're going to is there some type of waiver here by waiting too long? That's really the question that's being asked. Yes, there was an initial motion to dismiss filed. But again, that motion to dismiss that was initially filed was based on counsel not even knowing that a report had ever been served pre-suit.
Right, so, but you're arguing saying that this report didn't have causation. So why didn't you object at that time within the 21 days?
Good question. Because you're not required to object. A non-physician, it's not can they be qualified. And specifically to your point, in this case, if Mr. Everlove in his report would have had 2 pages or 3 pages or 25 pages that were under the heading and title of medical causation, it would be as if those pages didn't exist. He cannot provide an opinion on medical causation. Back to your original question. The original motion to dismiss was filed. We didn't know there was a report. We were provided a report. The proper thing to do at that time is to pull your motion to dismiss down, because that original motion to dismiss was based on, we don't have any report within 120 days. Okay, counsel, you've given us one that you served pre-suit on the insurance company. We have it now. We're pulling down our motion. And then later on in December of 2024, and really no discovery had been done in the case. I know some time had passed, but if you look at the Jernigan case and our brief, the Poland versus Grigori case, the amount of time that passed and what was done or really not done in this case does not amount to waiver. 3 fact witness depositions, 1 mediation, no expert discovery. The only 3 cases that Appley cites to are, and if you'll just hold with me, the Aduma case, where it was held, it was too late when a motion to dismiss was filed after trial. The Memorial Hermann case, the motion to dismiss was not filed until the parties announced ready twice for trial. And then they cite the Spinks case in their brief. And in that one, the motion to dismiss, again, was filed after trial. The only precedent, not the situation here. We had 3 fact witness depositions. And more importantly, the plain language of the statute does not put a deadline on when a motion to dismiss has to be filed.
So is it fair to say nobody read his report then at that time? Just said, you know what, we received an expert report, but it's fair to say nobody read it. And then when you all did read it, it's not construed, a sufficient report under the statute.
Yeah, Justice Silva, I mean, we could get into the semantics, and I get the question. It's a fair question of what was happening and what were the reasons underlying, and I could get into those, and trial counsel could. The fact of the matter is the parties were attempting to see if there was going to be the possibility for resolution. That's why there really wasn't any discovery done the case. Three depositions, written discovery, no expert discovery, and a mediation. So there were things happening at the trial court level. It doesn't take away from the legal issue before the court and the legal precedent of there is no waiver here. There is nothing in the statute that puts a deadline on when you have to file a motion to dismiss. And the motion to dismiss we filed in December of 24 was timely, which then takes us to rule number three. So rule number two, if you omit an element, not a good faith effort as a matter of law. Rule number three is when a report does not represent a good faith effort, the trial court has no discretion and must grant a motion to dismiss. That dates back all the way to Palacios. That dates back to Jernigan. Probably the most succinct analysis is an opinion from the San Antonio Court of Appeals in 2018. And if the court will allow me just to read this very short three sentences, it will summarize rule number two and three. Under Chapter 74, an expert's report, quote, must include the expert's opinion on each of the elements identified in the statute, including the standard of care. Next sentence. An expert report that omits the standard of care, this is rule number two, applicable to the claimed error, quote, citing Palacios and Jernigan, the Texas Supreme Court, quote, cannot constitute a good faith effort to meet the statutory requirements. Now the next sentence is rule number three. If the expert report does not constitute a good faith effort and the deadline for to file the compliant report has passed, the 120-day deadline, here it is, the trial court has no discretion except to grant the motion challenging the report and dismiss the claim with prejudice. And again, that's the Schwartz case out of San Antonio, Schwartz versus Phipps, 2018, which does a very good job summarizing rules two and three, which brings us to where we go ahead.
Let yes. Apologize to stop you. So how do you respond to the appellee's brief and argument that the court granted them a 30-day extension to cure the expert report?
Very simply, there is no granting of a 30-day extension. On appeal, the issue is not before the court. Obviously, the only interlocutory order in this case is an order denying the 74.351B motion to dismiss. In the reporter's record, does the trial court suggest that a 30-day extension will be granted? Yes. And then it says, counsel, send me your order. Counsel, send me your order. We did. They didn't. And the case law is very clear, as we cited in our brief. The statute's clear in and of itself, but the Lopez versus Brown case cited in our brief, Houston 14th Court of Appeals, says that there is no effect, there is no extension order until it is written. And think about it. The policy behind that isn't for us. I'm not up here saying, that's in our favor. The policy behind that generally is to help the plaintiff out, because you've probably been a part of these cases. You may have authored some of the opinions. Oftentimes, there may be a situation where a trial court grants an extension, but for whatever reason, the plaintiff's counsel doesn't get service of that order, doesn't get notice of it. And so what the case law says is you don't have a 30-day extension until there's a written order and plaintiff's counsel has notice of it. There is no such thing that exists in this case. And so that is not before the court. There is no extension. And that's a very important point, and I may have to hit some of that on my rebuttal time. The Clark report is not before this court. And that's really important, because I'll close here unless the justices have any more questions and then come up during rebuttal. But in closing, what I would say is this, two main points. When you have a report from a non-physician, it is by definition, as a matter of law, not a good faith effort. If it's not a good faith effort, the trial court has no discretion but to dismiss. Point number one. Point number two, and I'm very anxiously awaiting counsel's responses to the court's questions. If you go through Appley's brief, they do not address the sole issue before this court. You won't find a section on it. You won't find a sentence on it. We provide a whole lot of case law on what amounts to no report at all. And we specifically lay out three case stories, Walgreens, Gingrich, and Ray. They don't cite to Walgreens, Gingrich, or Ray in their brief. There are no sentences. There are no sections on whether whether Mr. Everlove's report is no report at all. The only substantive section they have is section 5 in their brief that says they acknowledge this and they really concede it. You have to read Dr. Clark's report that's untimely and not before this court in conjunction with the paramedics report in order to satisfy the statute. So as we stand here right now, that is a conceded issue that the appellee has not even brought forward briefing or case law to controvert. And so we believe we win on that issue. We win on the issue of not only case law says it, but the appellee has not controverted the fact that it is no report at all. And I see my time is up.
Thank you. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, let me go ahead and ask a question. Yes. That way you can, you know, postulate on it while you're there. And I'm going to ask it of both sides, so whenever you want to get around to it, you can. I am a big proponent of reading the law in context with the purpose, like the legislative purpose of the code. So what I'd like is some discussion about the purpose, the legislative purpose of the requirement of the reports from y'all's perspectives.
When I come back or now?
When you come back, that way you can think about it, he can think about it.
May it please the court. Your Honor, this is a very simple case, clear and cut. The issue is whether there was a report or there wasn't a report. You heard the appellant say that they did receive a report and it was timely. So what we're going to do today, I'm going to walk the court on several grounds of why we win. The first one being jurisdiction. The first question that the court needs to ask themselves is, did the trial court grant a 30-day extension under Chapter 74? The answer to that is yes. And once that is a yes, then this case is no longer appealable. Chapter 74 says that, but not only that, Texas Supreme Court, Ogletree versus Matthews, affirms that. In that case, which the appellant conveniently fails to even address, this is a seminal case in the Texas Supreme Court that addresses issues on expert reports. In that case, the defendant did the same thing the defendant did in this case. They said that report was written by a nurse and therefore it doesn't qualify. The Texas Supreme Court shut that down. The defendant in that case failed to acknowledge subchapter C. Subchapter C states, once a 30-day extension is granted, it is no longer appealable. That's exactly what happened in this case. We served our expert report. They got it, and they're just turning a blind eye to it. They can't do that, Your Honor.
And counsel, who makes that determination when you all had that hearing on January 28th?
The determination of what, Your Honor?
With regards to the expert report, whether or not it's sufficient.
Well, the trial court does, and that's exactly what happened. The Honor
submit it as an exhibit?
Excuse me?
Did you submit it as an exhibit?
Submit what?
The expert report.
Yes, ma'am, we did.
Everlove, at that hearing?
Yes, ma'am, we did. Yes, ma'am, we did.
Why wasn't the report submitted along with your pleadings?
Which pleadings?
When the original petition was filed, yes, sir.
I'm not sure, but it is part of the record. That expert report was served on them back in December 20th, 2022, Your Honor.
But that was prior to the petition being filed. Why was it not simultaneously filed with the pleadings when you filed your lawsuit?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I need to look at the record on that. It's been a few years, so I don't recall that, whether it was served or not, or whether it was filed with the court or not.
Okay, and then you're saying at the hearing, at the January 28th hearing, you did submit Mr. Everlove's report to the trial court.
Correct.
And the trial court found that it was deficient and allowed you 30 days?
Correct.
To correct it? Okay. And why didn't you submit the order to the court?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to get to in the point. That order was submitted initially with our response. It was just a generic order. We did follow up and submitted an additional order, but that wasn't signed. The court signed the original order that was signed with their initial motion, with a response. Excuse me, the response. They signed that order. So, yes, that order does not specifically say what verbatim was the oral pronouncement of the judge. And I have it here, Your Honor, and which was submitted to the court by the opposing counsel. And this is the reporter's record 23-25, which we cited in our brief, where Judge Esquivel found that we made a good faith effort and granted the 30-day extension. And again, once that happens, Your Honor, we can no longer have this appeal. We supplemented that expert report within 7 days after we were granted that 30-day extension.
And counsel, who determines that that is a sufficient report?
Well, the trial court did. The trial court found that it is a sufficient report. And there's a different...
Did you all have a hearing on that?
Yes, Your Honor.
The trial court held that that was a sufficient report?
Yes, Your Honor. It's here in the transcript. I mean, I've highlighted the experts. I don't know if I can give it to you, but it's on the record.
And what date did that hearing occur?
January 28th, 2025.
No, I meant the supplemental report that you all ended up filing with the doctor, the actual physician.
Well, the appellants prematurely filed this appeal. We got the order January 28th. We submitted our supplement February 7th. They filed their appeal, notice of appeal, February 18th.
Okay.
So just to wrap up jurisdiction, Your Honor, once the court grants a 30-day extension, it is no longer appealable. That is affirmed by the Texas Supreme Court at Ogletree versus Matthew. Now, assuming that the court does have jurisdiction, which we believe it does not, then the next question is to move to waiver. And the question before the court is this. Did Medicare EMS preserve its objections as required by Chapter 74? And you touched on this earlier, Justice Silva. They did not. And they did not on multiple occasions. And one of the critical questions that the court should ask themselves is, why did an appellant raise the seminal case of Ogletree versus Matthews, which is a Supreme Court case? They cited to obscure cases that are distinguishable from our cases. They didn't cite to Ogletree because they'll lose. That's why. Chapter 74 is very clear. Once an expert report is served, which they have already acknowledged it was timely served, they have 21 days to file any objections to the sufficiency of the expert report. We served him December 20th, 2022. January 10th, 2023 is the 21st date. They didn't raise an objection then. They answered April 24, 2023. They had until May 15th, 21 days after that, to raise an objection. They didn't do that then either. So as a matter of law, they waived their objections. And I'm going to read what Ogletree says here. Chapter 74.351A requires each healthcare provider whose conduct is implicated in a report to serve any objection to the sufficiency of the report not later than the 21st day after the date it was served, failing which all objections are waived. Emphasis added. And the court goes on to say, because the hospital did not object within the 21-day period, its objections were waived.
So, counsel, how do you respond to their argument that it was not a good faith effort? So in reading the letter that you submitted to opposing counsel back in December 2022, you state that this is a healthcare liability claim. If it's a healthcare liability claim, the statute clearly says that you have to submit an expert report by a physician only to determine causation. So how do you respond to their argument, whether or not Mr. Everlove's report was a good faith effort?
Absolutely, Your Honor. We're going to concede to the fact that, you know what, Mr. Everlove is not a doctor. He's not a physician. However, the legislator's intent in the statutory framework of Chapter 74 allows under subsection C to cure a deficient report. Ogletree says that a no report is different from a deficient report. So trial court found that our report was deficient, but there's a cure mechanism in the statute that allows for supplementation. That is exactly what our court did, what Judge Esquivel did. He granted the 30-day extension because he found on the record that we had made a good faith effort. So the trial court determines that in its discretion. It's not up to me. It's not up to the defendants. The trial court determined that there's a good faith effort, grants a 30-day extension. It is no longer appealable.
Can you point us to case law that allows you to supplement the report with a completely different report, a completely different expert?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Your Honor, Ogletree versus Matthews again. In this case, the defendant said that there was no report because a nurse wrote it, right? And in that case, they allege that they didn't address a standard of care, they didn't address breach or causation. The only thing the defendant appellant here is alleging that we didn't meet the medical causation. And that can be cured through the Chapter 74 mechanism, subsection C. In this case, they allege that no nurses were not qualified to render an opinion as to causation under the statute. The court shut that down. What did they do? They granted the 30-day extension. The plaintiffs here supplemented that report with a physician that met the medical causation element requirement, and that was that.
And that physician had not submitted a prior report, correct?
Correct.
Within the 120
correct.
Days.
Correct. Now, if I want to go, just to go back to waiver, Your Honor, we've already addressed that they waived their right under 21 days, right? And you touched this earlier. The defendant appellant got our expert report. They filed their motion to dismiss August 31st, 2023. And immediately the day after they filed their motion to withdraw, and this is from Mr. Callender himself, and I quote verbatim, "We had not seen it." That's not our problem, Your Honor. We served it properly under the law. If they did not see it, that's their problem. They could have had, like you said, Your Honor, they could have had the opportunity to raise any objections then or within the 16-month period. They didn't. Then by conduct, they waived their opportunity to object to any sufficiency on the expert report. That's three occasions where they've already waived. On the fourth one, they actively participated in litigation. They did depositions. They took depositions of my client. We did discovery. We even went to mediation. So we litigated this matter for almost 20 months before they filed their new motion to dismiss alleging the same thing. So therefore, Your Honors, their conduct falls in line with Ogletree versus Matthew. And they cannot sit on their hands and say, "Oh, we can raise it at any time we want." That's prejudicial to our client. Now, if this doesn't constitute waiver, I'm not sure what does.
Well, counsel, how do you respond to their argument that they don't have to waive because it's no report at all?
Well, Your Honor, if I can read Ogletree versus Matthews, that's exactly what the defendant here said regarding the expert report, and the Supreme Court shut that down. And I read, "In this respect, a deficient report differs from an absent report. Thus, when a report is deemed not served because it is deficient, the trial court retains discretion to grant a 30-day extension, and the legislature explicitly stated that such orders are not appealable." It's exactly what happened in this case. Now, this prohibition is both logical and practical. If Dr. Ogletree's position were correct, a defendant would be entitled to immediately appeal a trial court's order denying dismissal anytime a report failed to meet strict statutory guidelines, even though the statute permits a plaintiff to cure defects of that nature. We decline to read Section 74.351 so narrowly. If a defendant could immediately and prematurely appeal, the Court of Appeals would address the report's sufficiency while its deficiencies were presumably being cured at the trial court level. An illogical and wasteful result. Moreover, because a legislator authorized a single 30-day extension for deficient reports, healthcare providers face only a minimal delay before a report's sufficiency may again be challenged, and this case dismissed if warranted. Thus, if a deficient report is served and the trial court grants a 30-day extension, that decision, even if coupled with a denial of a motion to dismiss, is not subject to appellate review. That is precisely the situation we face here. That is precisely the situation we face here in this case.
Well, procedurally, do you think there was maybe a mistake? So you have the motion to dismiss. That's the hearing that was held. You make the argument there is an expert report, Your Honor. We'd like some time to supplement it, correct the deficiencies. Should the trial court have held on to the dismissal order, let you try to cure it within the 30 days, come back, hold a hearing, and if it's still insufficient, then grant the dismissal?
Well, I would say yes, because In other words, a defendant should have waited till we supplemented our report and then filed their appeal. They didn't do that here.
Happened here, though. So the only order before the court is a dismissal.
Correct.
So we can't even consider that the court granted the 30-day extension or anything that happened past the order that was signed in January.
Again, if we rely on that order, yes. But the oral pronouncement and the record that was submitted by defendant opposes that. And that verb expressly says that the court granted a 30-day extension because they found a good faith effort was made in the Everlove report, Your Honor.
But that wasn't reduced to writing, though.
Correct. And before my time's up, defendant did opine on a case, Lopez versus Brown. Now, that case, and this is what the defendant appellant is trying to do, Your Honor. They're trying to make you guys see this case through a peephole. And this case requires you to look at it from a panoramic view. In Lopez versus Brown, it's to the benefit of the plaintiff because Chapter 74 requires that when the court grants a 30-day extension, it must be in writing so that the plaintiff knows when to supplement their report by. It doesn't benefit the defendant. And in Lopez v. Brown, there was no record made in that court. That's why. In our court, there was a record made. In the Lopez versus Brown, there was no record made. So that's why they had to rely on the order. And in that case, the plaintiff didn't supplement their expert report within that time frame. And that was the issue. So this case misleads what actually happened in this case. This Lopez v. Brown.
Were you all made aware that this report was not sufficient enough because it was not a physician's report?
We were made aware of that the day we had our hearing and the trial court ruled on it. Not once did defendant appellant raise that issue within the 21 months that we had litigation.
But this is a healthcare liability claim.
Correct.
You need a physician's report.
I agree, Your Honor, and I'm not going to argue that. However, Chapter 74 provides a mechanism to cure, not to kill. That legislature has been very clear, and if I can read that here, in Ogletree versus Matthew again, the legislator recognized that not all initially timely cert reports would satisfy each of the statutory criteria. As a result, the amendments explicitly give trial courts discretion to grant a 30-day extension so that parties may, where possible, cure deficiencies. That's exactly what happened in this case, Your Honor. Now, if I may continue finally, Your Honor, to close out. The defendant appellant here wants to force pieces of a puzzle that don't fit. There's only two pieces that fit. Dismissal for lack of jurisdiction or affirm the court's order. There's nothing else in between. We served the expert report. The trial court found in its discretion that we made a good faith effort and granted a 30-day extension. Once that happens, appeal is extinguished. They can't appeal no more. That's Chapter 74, and that's in the Texas Supreme Court. That's exactly what happened in this case. If that's not enough, the defendant waived on multiple occasions. They didn't raise their objections within 21 days. They waived by conduct. They issued a motion to dismiss, withdrew it the next day. They continued litigation, depositions, discovery, and mediation. And then on the eve of trial, filed their motion to dismiss again, alleging that no report was made. Your Honor, I mean, the report was served. They're just turning a blind eye. They never once argued Ogletree versus Matthew in their briefing. Why? Because this is the case. This is the case that wins it for us and loses it for them. Now, with the time that I have left, Your Honor, we are asking the court to impose sanctions. Under Rule 45, it allows for the court in its discretion to impose sanctions. We're asking for $50,000 in sanctions. Why? Because as you can see through defendant's conduct in filing a baseless appeal, knowing that the case law in Chapter 74 allows for a supplemental report once a court grants a 30-day extension, then it's a waste of judicial resources. It's prejudicial to our client. We've litigated this matter for ongoing for almost 4 years. Not once did they raise an issue to the expert report until the eve of trial. Therefore, Your Honor, we're asking this court to dismiss this case for lack of jurisdiction or affirm the court's order, the trial court's order, and impose sanctions. Now, I do have a minute left, Your Honor. If there's any question that you want me to answer, available now. If not, I thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. A few points on rebuttal and Justice West. I will address the question that you asked. Just so I don't forget, a few quick points on rebuttal. I think it is now clear about midway through Appellee's presentation. I think there was finally an admission that there's no written order on an extension. So, I mean, the record makes that clear, but that's abundantly clear. And let's talk about, I believe it's a red herring, and I'll say why it's a red herring, but the issue of an extension and how that impacts jurisdiction, there's no other way to say it, and I say this professionally and respectfully. Appellee completely doesn't understand the case law, and they have the case law they presented wrong. I like Ogletree. Ogletree is a good opinion, and I'll tell you why. But here's what the Texas Supreme Court and courts all across have said. Let's talk about if there actually was a combo order, a motion to dismiss and an extension. We don't have it, but let's talk about it since they want to raise it. In Batiga, in 2009, the Texas Supreme Court, and I'm quoting, said, a provider may pursue an interlocutory appeal of the denial of a motion to dismiss when no expert report has been timely served, whether or not the trial court grants an extension. In Watkins in 2009, the Texas Supreme Court said that the same thing. In the Benavides versus Cantu case, a case released 9 days ago in San Antonio, September 10th, 2025, the court in Benavides says, normally you can't appeal a combo order. However, the Texas Supreme Court has held a healthcare provider may pursue an interlocutory appeal of the denial of a motion to dismiss when no expert report has been timely served, whether or not the trial court grants an extension. Now, I could keep going. I have the Quinton case. I have the Westover case. The point is they're incorrect on the case law. So let me now tie it to Ogletree. Why does Ogletree say that the hospital, it was a multi-defendant case. A lot of what he read you dealt with Dr. Ogletree's objection as a defendant in the case. Let me tell you what the Ogletree opinion stands for. It's a situation where the court was dealing with a deficiency analysis, not a no report at all analysis. And in Ogletree's deficiency analysis, that is the rule of law that comes from it. And what happened in Ogletree? There were five reports at the end of the day. Initially, there was a doctor report and two nurse reports. The doctor report that was initially served within 120 days talked about the nurse and Dr. Ogletree. And so the holding in Ogletree is correct, and I don't run from it. I think it's a good holding. If you're talking about deficiency, I don't think causation was enough or standard of care and breach were good enough, and you have a timely served physician report and two timely served nurse reports, and you have a motion to dismiss and a granting of a 30-day, not appealable, not appealable. But that's not the situation here. Batiga, N. Ray Watkins, and every court in Texas jurisprudence says you're dealing with a different situation when you're in the no report at all category. What is that category? It includes four things. You totally fail to serve any report. The case law over the last 25 years said that's no report at all. You fail to implicate. You know, the failure to implicate cases, those amount to no report at all. The situation we are here on, where you only provide a non-physician report within 120 days, that is no report at all. And those are the primary circumstances in which we see there is no report at all. So that's why rule number three, I laid out the rules, is so important. Rule number three is, if it does not amount to a good faith effort because you don't have an element causation, the trial court has no discretion but to grant a motion to dismiss, meaning so they can't grant a 30-day extension. Now we come back to what I started with. Why does Batiga say you can appeal a combo order in a no report at all scenario? You can appeal a combo order because the trial court never had discretion to grant an extension because it was no report at all. Again, we've gone on and on about it. There isn't an extension order before the court. One thing on waiver, the Jernigan case, Texas Supreme Court, again, Appellee has brought forward no case law that would suggest there's waiver due to time and discovery that was conducted. The Jernigan case specifically says a defendant who waited almost 2 years to move to dismiss the case while participating in discovery and filing a motion for summary judgment and other pleadings did not waive his right to move for dismissal because Chapter 74 doesn't have a deadline to file a motion to dismiss. And then finally, Justice West, to your question, what's the legislative intent? That was established way back in Palacios. And that's really the two-part test that started. You need to inform the defendant of the conduct called into question and provide the trial court with a basis to show that the claims have merit. And the reason the legislature put in 4590I to start with, and then Chapter 74, was to weed out frivolous claims. So it's a low threshold. I'll agree with Appley. It's not, you don't have to prove your case at the expert report stage. You just have to meet a very low threshold. And Justice Silva, I thought you asked a very pointed question, which is, you asked Appley's counsel, but doesn't the statute already tell you? You said, when did you know that you needed a doctor's report? And he's like, we didn't know till we got down at the hearing. It says in the statute. It says plain language, very clearly, you have to have a report by a physician within 120 days. And if you don't, then the trial court has no discretion but to dismiss. So it's a low threshold, but it's also a low burden. It's a low burden. Talk about standard care, talk about breach, bring forward a qualified expert on causation, and then you can pass that low threshold. Appellees did not in this case. And it's for these reasons we would ask this court to reverse the trial court's denial of motion to dismiss and remand for fees and costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Anything else, Justices? Yes, Justice West?
Yeah, what I'd like, because I am a purpose-oriented thinker, if y'all could submit a brief or a memo regarding legislative purpose of the doctor's report, not necessarily back-to-back, if y'all could each submit one maybe within, is 2 weeks long enough? That would help me in being able to.
Justice West, not to Dr. Clark's report, but you're talking the broader theme of right. Requiring a doctor on causation.
Yes. Yeah. No, not specific, just specific to the legislation. So.
Justice West, by my calendar, that shows October 2nd. Are you good with that? Or?
That'd be good with me.
I just pulled it up to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
Thank you, Justice West. Thank you, parties. This case will be under submission.